everybody. Welcome to day two of E3 2018. Yay. I'm still here. I'm Ben Hansen, joined by Kyle Hilliard.
I'm still here as well.
That's Ben Reeves.
How's it going?
Real good. And Cyril Vasquez.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, man.
It's nice to be here.
Last night, you were just sitting off on the table, off screen, just kind of yelling at us and waving frantically when you had something
to
say.
He raised his hand. He wanted to add something. And
it was
just
very hard.
You ignored him.
You went so long last night, Cyril. I'm very sorry. But last night, if you didn't tune in to the last episode in your podcast feed, a lot of people said, what is wrong with you guys? Why aren't you talking about Nintendo? I don't know if we made this clear. We were recording that and streaming that before Nintendo's Nintendo Direct happened, so we didn't know exactly what was going on there.
It might have been a hint that went up before the Nintendo stream.
All right, look, YouTube comments are another flavor of thing, right?
I don't like this ARG we're pulling on our listeners.
It's true. But now we're finally going to talk about Nintendo. We've played some of the games. We watched the Nintendo Direct. But beyond that, we're also talking about some stuff beyond that, some Sony appointments, which were exciting. We can dive into Last of Us Part 2, which we also didn't give enough time to in the last episode. Yeah. And then some Bethesda stuff, maybe some Ubisoft as well towards the back half of the show. We have Game Informer editors milling about. And then in this audio version, we'll also have game developers, hopefully if they show up, if they walk through the door that I'm looking at right now, later on. That's going to be in a separate stream after a quick break, but we'll make it clear if you're watching this live exactly how that's going to work. Okay, Nintendo Direct. Let's get some less interesting things, arguably, tell me if I'm wrong, out of the way first. Fortnite on Switch, out now, free.
Fun. Not a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's going to take over the world. Yeah. That's great.
Hollow Knight also out right away, which is cool. That's a good game.
True. Weird things. Daemon Cross Machina is what they opened the Nintendo Direct with, where it's just a mech game that looks like a Platinum game, but it's not a Platinum game.
Yeah, Marvelous, I believe, is involved
cool
with it.
Cool art style.
Yeah, nice cel-shaded kind of thing, but... Yeah. That didn't really like stand out as like, you know, being crazy, you know.
Right,
interesting.
Right. And then there's also the confusing Super Mario Party. This is the Super Paper Mario.
What's confusing about Super Mario Party?
I'll tell you exactly what's confusing, because I was watching that trailer and then they're like out on some fantastic picnic out in the woods and they set down their Switches on the picnic table and then they're like rubbing their hands over multiple Switches, like arguing about how it's arranged. Like, it's bizarre. So basically, it proves the tech that the Switches can communicate with each other, and they're like stacking multiple Switches on a table, and they know where the other Switch is, which is really weird.
Well, they connected them, right? They like drew a line between the two screens, and that was that's what alerted it that they were connected in that way, right?
But how many people outside of the Nintendo office are going to get together with friends and multiple Switches to play that game?
I think that's the part that was confusing to Hansen, is like who gets together with friends and plays Mario Party.
They also showed it like... Are you zooming in on my pants there? What are you doing?
Will you let me zoom in on your pants? By the way, Jeff Cork called you Game Informer's Richard Simmons. Just
want
to point out.
It was really good.
You were supposed to introduce him as Game
I know, I'm sorry. I'm not that clever.
I went and bought a pair of shorts that exactly match this couch. It looks like I'm not wearing anything.
Smart move.
Oh, yeah.
I also like that they started that trailer by just acknowledging the fact that Mario Party is a series of moments where you really want something bad and you just get the exact opposite of what you want.
Mario Party's life, baby. Yeah. I think they made it pretty clear in every frame of the word. Blah, blah, blah.
Looks fun.
Looks fine. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate took up a lot of that Nintendo Direct.
Also Fire Emblem.
Yeah,
that's true. Let's talk about Fire Emblem. Reeves, you're a Fire Emblem guy. What do you think of it? So it's Fire Emblem Three Houses.
All we saw was on that direct. It looks different than normal Fire Emblems because looks like there's more armies. Like, it's a different kind of strategy game.
Yeah.
But I'm into it. Like, I'm willing to give it a try. I'd love to get my hands on it and play it at some point.
Yeah, it's the same developer. It's interesting. It doesn't look like a huge, huge budget on that thing, but that's about what Fire Emblem should look like on the Switch.
There are areas where you can walk around. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's, I believe, is new for the series. I haven't seen that in the series before.
Yeah, seems all right. All right,
but it looks cool.
Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Very exciting.
Yeah.
They added the Ultimate word on there for the whole title, and it means... maybe what it sounds like, which is this is everything in theory you've always wanted from one Smash Brothers game packed in, including the return of, as they pitch it, every character that's ever appeared in the series. Solid Snake is back, which is something I don't think anybody...
That was a big surprise.
I was surprised about that.
We had a list of like who we think is going to be in the next Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
I talked Brian Shea out of including Snake on that list.
You talked to Brian Shea?
That was my first...
Holy God.
But this was a huge surprise for sure.
Yeah.
And David Hayter is voicing him.
That's huge. That's going to be so much fun. And as I think you were talking about before, secretly the most exciting thing is Shadow Moses stage is back.
Yes.
So in theory, there's going to be those absurd codec calls. But now they're going to have Coda calls where Solid Snake's talking about Cloud Strife and every other character that they've added since his last edition in Brawl.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah. It's going to be very funny.
Do you think they'll do that for every character now?
I would hope so.
I asked Nate Bildorf and Bill Trinan, and they said they weren't sure. Like, okay. They said Hader was doing the voice, but specifically about that. Like, I asked specifically about, will we hear, you know, a new dialogue of him wondering what Yoshi tastes like. They said they weren't sure.
Okay.
You know that classic dialogue.
That's right.
But, okay, Solid Snake, that's great. Young Link's in there alongside Toon Link, which is a bizarre twist.
I feel
cool
like that's the best explanation of, no, seriously, every fighter is in here.
We're not messing around.
Yeah, Young Link and Toon Link. Pichu, the one that everyone forgot was in Smash Brothers.
Hurts itself when it electrocutes people.
The best fighter.
Right. Obviously, Ice Climbers are back. Like, everybody you can think of is back. The only weird thing, and this is as nitty-gritty as it gets with... Actually, it's not as nitty-gritty as it gets for Smash Brothers. Yeah. But thinking about... In the last one for Wii U and 3DS, Charizard was a standalone character. He's not in this one because Pokemon Trainer is back, which effectively is just Charizard. Like, you can play as Charizard the entire time. Everything's great.
So do they have Charmander and Charizard?
No, it's Squirtle, Ivysaur, and Charizard.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And also Pokemon Trainer you can play as a female now. A ton of new costumes.
Yep. Yeah.
That Direct, man, Smash is like my favorite series, but I was even tapping out during the middle of that Direct.
Yeah.
When they're going through character by character... And they were small changes. Some of them were like, hey, there's a new skin for this character.
Olimar's helmet cracks now. Yeah.
Right. They were microscopic. And they said, maybe the changes could add up to over 100,000 or 10,000.
Tens of thousands. Oh, yeah.
Right.
We made a lot of individual edits on the code.
Yeah.
Because we need to make this game.
Well, some of it was like, oh, Bayonetta's back. She has the like Bayonetta 1 and Bayonetta 2 costumes. And they sound different.
Yeah.
Like, that was
and
like,
then they play the two clips. It's like, no, sorry.
Barely distinguishable.
I tried. It's not, yeah. And there's just like stuff like Ryu now automatically faces his opponent in one-on-one situations,
right.
Which is the stuff that I like to hear, but I would like to hear it in a separate thing that's not a Direct. Because it just seems like I would like you to go deeper than you are now, but... Like, it feels weird to have this extended trailer for it.
Yeah. It was a lot. As a Smash fan, I was reaching my limit. I can't imagine not being a Smash fan and watching that Direct.
Yeah.
But I'm super happy about Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. I feel like I just went back and played that Wii U version not that long ago, and it's like, that's about all I want from Smash. The idea of basically that with even more characters, I'm good.
Yeah. And we played it, and it's Smash Brothers. Like, it plays well. It's a little bit faster, I guess. But even just playing like one or two matches, we didn't really get a great sense of that.
You say a little bit faster, it's interesting. One of the things they did mention in terms of like overall package, they said a little more UI details. Like, if character has a meter for any reason, like Cloud's Limit Break, that'll show up on the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
And then just faster overall with the ultimates. They said they sped all those things up.
Final Smashes?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So they There aren't many that, like, you activate and are, like, punching a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, like, Gigamac, right? He would just, like, you could punch a lot, I think. Now he just has, like, one huge punch.
I think, like, the biggest difference would be, like, with the Landmaster of just, okay, this
the Landmaster is gone.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying, is that, like, instead of that tank coming in like, maybe, like, a minute or so thing wandering the battlefield, it's just, here's a quick sequence that gives you the fan service you want and just, you know, cuts to the chase.
Get out.
Also, done.
There are, if you want to get into tiny little details, a couple things that are having me a little worried. One of them is, if you're in a one-on-one match, you do more damage just to speed up that round. I don't know how I feel about that. I love a good, long, drawn-out Smash Brothers one-on-one.
Yeah.
But that's small. The other thing that I worry about is I'm a big roller in Smash Brothers, and they're punishing rollers now, where if you block... or use the shield and then roll around too much.
Oh, I see, yeah.
It'll make you vulnerable for a longer window. Like, those tiny details are what we're down to in Smash.
Right.
But it's like, okay, I can see the hardcore fans not being crazy about it.
They're really polishing it, though, so
yeah.
It could be good.
I also like just
it could be good. It might be good.
Like, some of those changes are even like cosmetic. Of just like, hey, did you notice that in this cutscene, this character's in there?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That's another change.
Proto Man and Bass are in Mega Man's Final Smash.
Did you guys ask about 8-player Smash? Did anybody ask about that?
It's present.
It is?
Yeah, you can play with single Joy-Cons. Like you know what I mean? Like, one Joy-Con.
Right.
That's, like, one way to get 8 players. I asked them if they can do 8 pro controllers. They said they weren't sure. But it is definitely in the game. 8-player Smash is present.
Yeah. Cool. Other things that we don't know about... Well, cool new additions is including, like, the Omega Stage version. Now every stage also has a Battlefield variant as well, which I think is super smart. Because Final Destination is great and all, but... Going up against like Wario and his dumb bike in Final Destination, it's so annoying. It's the idea of having a battlefield structure with the 3 different platforms. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Super excited about that. Let's see. Oh, we also don't know about like selecting music in the stages.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's in there. It's too good of a feature not to have come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of
You pick the map now first, which is
right before characters,
which is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
that is interesting.
Also, Ridley's in it.
Oh yeah,
weird, freaky looking Ridley's in this.
I love it. We were talking about it earlier. I like how separate he looks from everybody else. Like,
yeah,
he just is this weird, scary monster applauding the match at the end.
Look, it's stupid to see him.
Look, I'm not to kill all of you, but you know, I gotta give it up.
Yeah. His reveal trailer was awesome. Yeah, that's cool. Like good peak Smash trailer. Good, but
Mega Man was there for some reason.
Yeah, he's like the first take, and that's like this weird horror film with Ridley in it. Yeah. It's cool, man.
Also, did anybody think Ridley was a woman? Back in the day, like she,
it is
girl? Like I used to think
thought
so.
It was too, but when writing these stories, I looked it up, and yeah, Ridley's a male.
Ridley's a guy. Apparently.
I guess I always just assumed with the Ridley Scott thing that it was a guy, but I have no idea.
But I thought it was more like based on Ripley, right? From
no,
like his Believe It or Not,
yep.
No, it's anyway. Tip of the cap to Ridley Scott, right?
Right.
The director, not of confused Alien. With Ripley.
Right.
The star of Alien.
It is very confusing, though.
It's a mess, yeah.
Anyway, I played as Ridley.
Yeah, how was that?
Yeah, it feels good. Somebody, I think Jeff Cork compared it to like a fast or a heavier Meta Knight.
Sure, I think that was me, but
Well, it was
Let's give it to Cork.
It was somebody smart.
We don't have clarification whether who said what. Let's just move on.
And I think that was pretty apt, like some of the movesets pretty similar. It has the dash kind of move that he has.
Right.
That Meta Knight has.
And,
I liked Ridley. But I feel like I need to play it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's an interesting addition. I went to my old standby Link, who's now Breath of the Wild Link, which doesn't seem that different, but then you realize they changed the bombs. So like the classic Link B-down bomb that I've been doing for 20 years at this point, now you can control when it detonates. Not only that, but I feel like the blast radius is a lot bigger. Like I took a lot of people out just using that bomb that I can detonate up whenever
I
want
now.
I
think you can do a lot more damage to yourself too. Hook shot is also gone as well.
Do you ragdoll for like a second and a half after you fall after that?
Just and roll down the hill for a long time? No, they didn't.
What does he have to replace the hook shot then?
Nothing, man.
I guess I did some weird grab. Yeah. But it's not like it's gone in the game. We have Young Link and we have Toon Link that are going to be exactly how you want them, you know?
Yeah. I like the Breath of the Wild change. I think
did any
cool.
of you try Daisy?
Daisy was not available for us to play. But she's Peach. She's just Peach's moveset. So.
What they call...
They're calling them Echoes, which I think it's just sort of like... them trying to get away from the word clones because that implies they didn't do any work on them. So whenever anyone says, this character's a clone... It's an echo, please.
It's an echo.
Please respect the work we've done on this game.
Pit and Dark Pit, they're echo fighters. You can't judge
Dark
us for
Pit,
that.
Everyone's favorite Smash Brothers fighter.
The hues are black, please.
Yeah, and so overall, the big mystery going into this was, what is this game? Is it a port? Is it a new game? Playing it, hey everybody, it's a port. It's a glorified port, and it's very glorified, and it's basically everything I want from Smash, including Corneria seems to be back as a level, which was a huge absence in the last one.
Big
it's
Blue?
It's fine. Yeah. It's exactly what I thought it was, where it's a port, but who cares? It's great.
It's pretty telling that they referred to everything as changes. We changed this. We changed that. It wasn't that they built anything from the ground up. We changed the Wii Fit trainer's face. We didn't make a new Wii Fit trainer, you know?
And Sakurai, it was nice to see Sakurai in the video, by the way, but he even had a funny line where he's like, I was hesitant, but the Wii Fit designers demanded that I change her face. Then they show the difference, and it's like, you made the eyeballs like 3 pixels wider. Yeah. It's like, just absurd.
I mean, and that's not to like imply that they're clearly doing a lot of work to this game, but it is a substantial port. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But honestly, I don't know what Smash Brothers fans would want other than just a game with every character in it.
Yeah,
that's brilliant.
Yeah,
it is. And
even if it's a port,
I'm happy with it for sure. Yeah.
They had the interesting messaging though, where Sakurai's like, our main priority was getting every character in this game. We're not as focused on new characters. Just maybe there'd be one or two along the way in the build up to it, but just to set expectations that don't expect more than what would you guess? Maybe even 3 new characters launch?
Yeah, before launch, I think, is
which
kind
is
of
December.
The key word here. Because I think they are probably going to support it with more DLC. But I wonder just since, Sakurai's work ethic with this series has been such a kind of like a story throughout the years. I wonder if he just went into this project, look, if I'm going to make another one, I'm just going to scope it out from the maximum degree just to start. So we know that I'm going to do a butt ton of work on this game. So you guys can properly leave me alone. And then when I'm done, that's it. That's this is everything in Smash Brothers. Leave me alone.
I'm calling it Ultimate for a reason. Yeah, I'd like to make Kid Icarus 2, please.
Please let me do it. Although it was interesting in the Nintendo, post the Nintendo Direct in the Treehouse live stream, he said that I'm not saying this is the end of Smash Brothers. If the series continues, it'll be tough to have all these characters again. So it kind of seems like this is the end of this saga of Smash Brothers.
Or something. It'd be crazy if they went back, like in the next one, just had like 12 characters. Or
but it's 3D, like, super, you know, but they just nuke it.
And it's like super like polished and like, I don't know, kind of a different direction or something.
Right.
Speaking of 12 characters, they also did mention that you'll start with just the original cast of Smash Brothers, of the first Smash Brothers.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And that you're going to be unlocking characters super fast, like faster than you have
and
been.
Yeah, they pitched that it was going to be like a more interesting process or faster.
That's cool. I didn't know that. That's
more interesting microtransactions.
Like I kind of, I like that idea. Like, I like having, I want to unlock all those characters, you know? I want that, that character.
What would be fun is if they start with the original art style too. And you slowly, as you unlock characters, you upgrade the graphics.
Right, they come out of like their shells, just like break free. Like,
finally.
Oh my god. If you could just, if you, on the character select screen, you just, do you want N64 Kirby? Do you want GameCube Kirby?
Gosh, that'd be cool.
That would be so good.
That would be good. The so I went to that Smash Brothers Invitational, the big tournament thing, which is really just an opportunity for me to play more Smash with a GameCube controller, which announced that's back, which is very exciting.
And they're going to make more, they said.
Right.
And the logo on the GameCube controller will be slightly different.
It is totally slightly different. But I went to that VIP event, and it was a long, hot walk in downtown LA, which is just lovely this time of year, everybody. Come on down. And I made that walk, got there, and was going up the super cool VIP access stairs. Guess who's in front of me? MF and Sakurai.
What?
Really?
Walking up the stairs in front of me. We get to the top of the stairs, and he's there with the translator, which we worked with Miyamoto, the guy that translated like the rapid-fire questions.
The one that we weren't sure if we could trust.
Right, exactly. Just that we could.
I still don't trust
and
him.
And so it was one of those good E3 moments where I realized, oh, Cork, just, no, you're not in the mirror. You're fine. It's right, that area right over there. Cork's in the off camera for everybody. So recognize the translator as that E3 moment of like, I got to go for it. I've always wanted to meet Sakurai. Like, he's one of my favorite developers. I got to do it. And so I started out and I said, hey, Mr. Translator, good to see you. I've been answering from Game Informer. And then Sakurai was there looking pretty meek and just, I went for that quick pivot. And I was like, hey, Sakurai, I just want to say thank you for the new Smash Brothers. Security was aggressive.
Oh, really?
Like, he had several bodyguards around him, like, whoop! But I got, like,
and they smashed you out of the event?
They really did. But I got, like, a quick handshake with Sakurai, and it was very light and very frail and very weak. And then
you could tell all that.
It really, it was
he's done a lot of smashing in his life.
That's true. That's
true. It's true, but I worried about it because his wrist was like the big injury that he talked about. So I don't know if they didn't want him to take people's hands because of that, or I was just an attacker. I'm not sure.
Probably the latter.
Yeah, but it was a weird situation, and the translator's like, yeah, we're pretty strict about this kind of thing. Like, don't shake that dude's hand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a little. Wow.
I did ask, a big old hug instead.
Right.
I did ask Trin and Bildorf about his health, and they said that he's in great shape, and he's all rehabilitated. And
they're,
ready to.
They're
to
not going to tell you. He can't get out of bed anymore.
His wrist doesn't work. It's just done. Yeah.
We have a new game play today video that's going to be going up on the site soon, showing off us playing Smash Brothers, all that stuff. Also, in that same session, I got to play Pokemon Let's Go EV/Pikachu, which you did as well, Kyle.
I did as well.
It was
equally.
You know, my biggest problem was the Pokeball controller. Because
you were really struggling with that thing.
Well, I hand you a ball, and then it's like, all right, which way's right side up?
It's a Pokeball. The red part, it goes on top. It's not that hard.
It was like at a weird angle.
No, you're just stupid.
Probably, but I had a really tough time with it. And they have like the strap.
Stupid,
man. And so like they want you to throw the Pokeball to like
you didn't
catch
have to put on the
Pokemon
ring
Go.
There's a strap and then a plastic ring that you're supposed to
so
put
is there,
on.
Is it basically like a yo-yo where you're supposed to like pretend you're throwing it and then it like kind of droops and then you pick it back up inside the
no
wrist?
In theory no, you're just supposed to mime it I guess.
Okay.
I liked it, Kyle, but I don't think I was ready to put a ring on it. Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu here.
But how big is the ball?
So they say it's life-size Pokeball, which is very
you
confusing
have one right now?
No, I don't. But the way that they explained it is they said that it's life-size, but, like, look, it's small, but there are a bunch of kids in the games and the show, so it should be that small.
But it's, like,
Ash is this
it's like a handball size, right?
No, it's smaller,
it was a smaller.
Than that.
It's smaller than a tennis ball?
It's like, what's that?
Like a cutie.
It's a cutie.
It's like the size of
Jeff
a cutie.
Cork.
Sure.
Like, oh, actually, that is, yeah, Cork said a mandarin good. Orange. That's pretty, that's pretty solid, reference. Yeah.
Everyone get your mandarin oranges from your kitchen and follow along with this podcast.
Pretend there's a control stick on it.
Yeah. And then also, like, it's Pokemon Go style catching, right? Where it's like a little green ring going. And at one point, I mimed throwing the ball behind me, and I got an excellent.
Yeah.
And then I spun the ball around on my wrist with the strap. Also got a good with that one. Yeah. So it seems a little bit fast and loose.
It's flimsy. I mean, I had a couple times where I tried to throw it off to the left, and I feel like it didn't really respond accurately, but there's, yeah. I mean, there's some things I like about it. Like the control stick is nice when you understand how to use it. I know you've never used a control stick before, so you struggled with it.
Not on but, a sphere.
But yeah, and the other thing about that game is you have to use motion controls. Even if you're playing on like handheld mode, the act of like throwing a Pokeball is a little different, but you're going to be like aiming around and moving.
Yeah.
And I got the chance to talk to Masuda about it, and like that's... there's no option to turn off motion controls.
Oh, really? What else did you learn from the Masuda interview?
Well, I was actually wearing the whole getup for the Pokeball where I had the ring on and I had the wrist strap on. And he came in.
During
and I went
the
to
interview?
Well, he came in while I was playing and I had to shake his hand. And like I just basically was like, hey, look, isn't this weird that I have all this crap on my hand? I want to shake my hand.
It's not crap. We're very proud of it, sir.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, I talked to him a little bit about... I'm trying to think of what the highlights were. But I talked to him about... I asked him if you could, in a roundabout way, use it to trade Pokemon and Pokemon Go.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the idea is you can take your Pokemon from Go and transfer it to the Switch game.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then that game does allow you to trade.
Oh, weird.
But there's no way to go back to Pokemon Go.
Mm-hmm.
And one little detail that I liked is you actually don't have to log into your, like, Pokemon Go account on the Switch. Like, if you want to send... you can send any of your Pokemon to anybody who has Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu or Eevee just by, like, proximity. It's not... you don't sign into both accounts and transfer it over.
That's really
cool.
It
just uses, like, the Bluetooth, which is nice.
That is super nice. That's Nintendo, everybody.
Yeah.
I think slightly disappointing Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
A lot of things people were hoping to see, expected to see, even just a tease of Animal Crossing.
No
Yoshi.
Yeah. No Metroid. Yoshi's been delayed.
No Bayonetta 3.
Bayonetta was a big thing.
Yeah.
If you're not like a big Smash fan, like you really didn't get much
and
out of
this.
And
even if
Direct.
You are, it's...
you got too
it's
much.
About what you want from Smash. That's about all you need to know.
Yeah.
So. But still, excited to play Smash in December. It'll be fun.
Yeah, not going to complain about Smash.
Yeah, for sure.
Ever.
We also saw Ghost of Tsushima. Reeves, you saw that? Cyril, you saw that?
Well, I mean, I technically saw that.
Get up Bertz
that
is mic, pumping his fist. I think he saw it, too.
Bertz saw it. Bertz is really excited about it, if you want to get him on here.
That's true. Well, this will be quick, because it's the same demo that people saw during Sony's press conference,
I mean,
right?
And just to reiterate, Nate Fox was there. He's, like, the creative director, and he, like, went into it a little bit more, but, like, obviously, samurai films are a big reference point for them.
Right.
And, if you watch that demo, you got that sense, I'm sure. But, like, every, like, scene in that game is just stunningly gorgeous, and they had a lot of cool... our demo, actually, they set it to like Japanese voice acting, which I thought was a clever move.
Without subtitles, right?
Without subtitles.
That's really aggressive
and like,
cool.
Yeah,
I love that.
It was cool, but you still kind of got a sense for what was going on in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one takeaway I think I got was like there's no supernatural elements to this game. For me, when I think of Sucker Punch, it's always like they do a lot of games that's...
raccoons.
Talking raccoons, and they've done superheroes, you know.
Yeah.
So this is, like, very grounded game. It takes place in a real point in history, like, surrounded by real history, but all the characters in the game are fictional characters.
Right.
They're not doing, like, a Assassin's Creed, you're meeting everybody famous in history. It's a fictional account.
So the demo that we saw at the press conference, it started with, like, 11 days after the Mongol invasion. Is that going to be counting up with the day-night cycle? Do you have any sense of that? Because Days Gone also has that similar counter based on the day-night cycle.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But it is an open-world game. Like, you're going through, you're exploring. The section they show is actually a side mission, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, cool.
So it's not even the main story, and that's kind of the quality of the side missions you'll get in the game, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, for sure. Also, we had a weird experience. I don't know what your experience was necessarily, but I was walking around that behind closed doors Sony thing, and I saw this person playing this game. It looked like a scene from 2001, and it looked about as slow as that too. Whereas this sci-fi game where a ship was like slowly trying to dock with another ship. I was like, what the hell is this? And realized the guy's wearing a Media Molecule shirt. And it's like, fuck. Dreams, man. They got me. They totally got me. And so then it's like, all right, I have to check this out. And they had this awesome mode, which they called the Dream Space. I wish I could remember the exact version of it. But basically,
Dreamscape,
it's WarioWare-ing. What's that?
Dreamscape, I want to say.
Something like that, yeah. But they allow you to kind of WarioWare style, rapid fire, not that rapid, but just going through all these different games that were made within Media Molecule's Dreams on the PlayStation 4. And I have watched trailers of that game for 4 years, 5 years now. Like, I really felt like I get it. I got it. But that demo really blew me away. It is absurd how good those games can look. Like, there's another space shooter that just was like Colony Wars on PS4, you know? It was just wild. Then you jump into a straight-up text adventure built within dreams, then like a bizarre 2D platformer, then like this atmospheric, nightmarish one where you just have a flashlight and it's kind of terrifying. Like, it is like playing through a series of very polished Game Jam games, and it's really cool.
I think the Game Jam comparison is really interesting and like probably a good one. And the guy I was talking to, first of all, I'll say that game is probably cooler than I've been giving it credit for.
100%.
Yeah. And the guy I was talking to is like, you, when you make your creations, you can add like a tag to it. And so if you want, when you go into play, like just a random selection of games, you can just like search for stuff other people have made.
Yeah.
And it'll give you a random sampling of stuff. And you can search for like, I just want to play some horror games tonight and type in some horror, and it'll give you a bunch of horror stuff. Or it's like, I want to play platformers and like search in platformers. It'll bring up the platformer tag stuff.
Yeah.
And like he compared it to like indie, even indie games are kind of hard to make these days, but this is kind of like, I have like a general idea for a game. It's like a micro game. Like you said, WarioWare, but yeah. It's like, I have an idea for a game. I'm going to kind of like sketch it out in dreams. And then I can play it. Like, yeah. It's actually pretty cool.
Is there, I mean, you mentioned WarioWare, obviously, but did you get the sense that that was something, you know, creators could do of just, hey, I'm basically going to make WarioWare in dreams. And I, you know.
I saw no limits based on what I saw from those demos. It was absurd. Like, so every game within WarioWare, you could do a cool, great looking version with a wildly different art style every time.
And you think it's possible to be like, hey, you start the game, you play this game, after you've completed the goal, it immediately shifts to like the next thing? Do you think that's something that would be possible?
I think it totally is possible. Okay. Yeah, and that weird dreamscape thing.
Right.
You can break it up by chapters. Okay. So I played like one chapter of that horror game and then moved on to the space game and then went back to the horror game later on. That game's wild. Like, I was working with a designer from Media Molecule while playing it there, and he was like, yeah, you know, I took a lot of 3D modeling classes. I'm a 3D modeler. That's where I got my start in the industry. And he's like, after working on this game for 5 years, however long they've been working on, he's like, I don't want to go back to any other tool set. He's like, this is just the best 3D modeling tech that I've ever used in my life. And at that point, it's like, it probably won't happen. He said it's more possible now than maybe in the past, but they got to get this thing on PC. Like, it'd be so incredible. Oh, for sure. It'll be great on PS4, but if that crap gets on PC, game on.
Yeah. But did you get to play with those tools at all?
No, I had other appointments.
I messed around with them a little bit.
Okay.
You have this kind of cursor that you're moving around with, like, the... I was a little put off at first, but, like, the PS3 control stick, like, the motion sensing...
I'd say four, but yeah.
Sorry. I had a PS3 controller. but, yeah, I was moving around with that, and then you can grab stuff. You can duplicate items real quick. You can, like, make things bigger or smaller. Like, it's... Once you get the hang of it, it seems pretty intuitive, actually.
All right. What'd you make?
I made a mini flower bed. Pretty cool, right?
And it was like as good as God of War. Is that just like?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I need a little bit more time with it, but yeah, I think it could be a 10.
It's really cool. And even they talked about the possibility of eventually getting to the point where if there's a great game that comes out of it, like selling it as a standalone thing. Also, the designer said that, like, oh yeah, we created Little Big Planet in this game a long time ago, like piece of cake. Which
is that what they're doing?
Including like
can they get this game out? They're just making Little Big Planet and dreams. Yeah.
The guy told me
snake in it.
Yeah, the guy told me they had
what
made
is this
God of War in this game a long time ago.
The Santa Monica. They actually revealed it that they created the entire game. Yeah, it's wild.
Good for them.
Also, real quick, we also played Tetris Effect.
Yeah,
yeah.
From the creator of Luminous and Rez and Mizuguchi, they had a demo there in VR, and I'm not a big PSVR guy, but I think it's one of my favorite PSVR experiences. I
really
love Tetris, and just having a fully absorbing music trippy ass version of Tetris, I was very
into it. Basically like if imagine playing Luminous but instead you're just the blocks are actually just Tetris, like the idea of you're going from song to song, and you know the visual style plays into it, and so when you're moving the blocks around, when you know drop them, they're all sort of in sync with the, like they make sounds that are in sync with the song you're listening to,
to the point that it's like a lot of that music's so good. The first track in particular, put it up for an Emmy. Emmy?
Is that what they
Grammy? Give Grammy. That's it. Yeah. Grammy, damn it.
Give it an Emmy,
it's
too.
It's so good. It's just incredible. Mm-hmm. And to the point that every time you rotate the block, it makes a little beat.
Right.
And so then it's like, well, am I blowing it by not like rotating the Tetris blocks to the actual beat?
You kind of fall into that rhythm, I feel.
Yeah, I definitely rotated more than I had to, like a lot. And this wasn't supposed to be in the build they showed us, but like you can zoom in and out of the field.
Oh, cool.
Which I guess he says like one interesting way to play it in VR is to just play it super close so that you have to look up at the top of the board.
Oh, weird. Okay.
So you can do that, or you can play it really far away and just sort of get lost in the background of it and just have Tetris be this very small part of like this synesthetic experience that you're having. And Mark McDonald, who was demoing the game, said that a lot of the reason they put it in VR is because it's a pretty good excuse to force people to use headphones.
Yeah,
and so
true.
Like that's a big part of like Mizuguchi games is how good the music is, and so I mean they're gonna have that notice of like please wear headphones when you're playing this, but like,
at the same
VR
time,
kind of you know forces it.
Crucial to say, it's not only in VR. You can also play on the baseline PS4, I hope it comes to other systems beyond that because it's just a cool musical driven version of Tetris.
There's also a little bit of Res in it too because he showed me the map of like here's the story mode for the game. And he said, like, it's not going to be like, you know, a tradition. It's not like, going to be like a campaign.
It reminds you of like the Amplitude story campaign where it's like there's a loose framework of a story that you can piece together a little bit.
He said that it is going to have like, you know, a loose message. There's going to be, look, there's going to be rhetoric and a point that the game is trying to make. But it's going to be very loose, let's say, very abstract. But like that part seems pretty exciting because just combining that, the aspects of Mizuguchi games that I like with Tetris is like, I'm totally sold.
You guys didn't even talk about the zone mechanic.
Yeah, they added a new mechanic to Tetris and it doesn't suck, which is a
that's
high
the
bar.
Brilliant thing is like to add something to Tetris, like Tetris is like quintessentially the perfect game, right?
Correct.
Like, just mechanically. And they added something to it and it actually is kind of cool.
Yeah. So it's a meter that builds up, you can deploy it whenever you want, and then that slows down time, basically freezes time, and any lines you clear will stack up. It reminds me of like in Pac-Man Championship DX, like when you go into that hyperdrive and you eat like 1,000 ghosts at once, it's like, it's a little bit like that, except for Tetris lines, where you're just stacking them up, and then when it's done, it's like, bam.
They all get shifted to the bottom, and at the end you get points basically as if you'd cleared like 12 lines at once.
Which makes it easier to clear the board.
Yeah.
Theoretically, you could clear the whole board.
Yeah.
I did 8 rows at once, and I heard that was very impressive.
And it, like in VR especially, it really hits you loud with like a musical blast and just effects in your face and everything. But from that trailer, everything looked really trippy and abstract. It's a little more grounded than that based on that first trailer. But at the same time, also, I was expecting it to kind of be peaceful. But there's like weird levels where it's like a Mayan ritual. And there's these beings like worshiping your Tetris play. And every time you rotate the piece, they're like, It's weird.
There's a Egyptian pyramid themed level where like it's just all this abstract symbols and it looks like something ripped out of Assassin's Creed. And there's all these like images coming at you in this really intense way.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Sucked. Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's cool. And PlayStation exclusive? Is that
as of now? Is it coming to Steam? I forget if they check it out on the trailer. I forget if they announced already that it's going to be coming to Steam because Res is on Steam now too. So I don't know if
then he reminded me that Luminous is coming out on a bunch of platforms again.
On Switch.
And I'm excited for that again.
I'll take more Luminous.
That's great. Yeah. There's no Tetris. Hey, Kyle, we're desperate to talk about Last of Us Part 2.
Yeah.
And you haven't seen it. Matthew Cotto standing over there with his mouth just full of food has. You want to jump in, Cotto?
You ready?
Get Kyle the hell out of here.
Let's make this work. All right. Goodbye.
That's not exactly a hot swap.
See you later.
And Bert's just so you know, we might have a visitor pretty soon, so you might want to make sure that door's open, all that stuff. First developer guest swinging by. Oh, hi. Welcome. He'll be on in a little bit. All right, Last of Us Part 2. Matthew Cotto, get up on that mic, man. Okay, so this seems like a similar situation to Ghost of Tsushima, where the demo behind closed doors is basically what people saw at the press conference, right?
Yep.
Okay.
But they're different games.
I understand
By different developers.
But in terms of, like, it was just a more guided walkthrough. Was Neil Druckmann, like, leading people through the demo?
He didn't say anything during the demo.
He was there. He was probably enjoying that trailer for the zillionth time.
Yeah.
He seemed to be taking it in quite well.
He seemed to really enjoy it. I don't know what's going on in his head. But
I did talk to him and his co-writer. It's Haley Gross is her name.
From Westworld fame.
Yeah. I did talk to them afterwards. And so, you know, I wasn't there and I didn't want to spoil the whole story for me or anything like that. But they certainly talked about, getting back into that world and, you know, exploring some of the places where Ellie is right now and stuff. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. What'd you learn about where she is right now?
Well, one of the things I asked about, and it sounds kind of obtuse, but it was something I was interested in, is that, like, you know, in Left Behind, we see Ellie have a relationship, and certainly in the trailer, we also see her kissing the character, I'm totally spacing
Dina?
Out. Dina, yes.
There we go, yeah.
You know, so her sexuality is a sort of a statement in the world. And so I was asking both of them, is that just sort of background for her as a character, or is that something that the other characters in the world sort of respond to or whatnot?
Yeah.
And they didn't say directly, but they said, you know, certainly that her being 19 and the kind of somewhat peaceful setting that we see in the trailer sort of is some of the ground or sort of gives it a context to explore some, you know, different kind of sides of Ellie than other than just, you know, the murderous hatchet wielding, arrow shooting, gun,
yeah,
face blowing off part of that character. So that's great. The one thing I would say is, and this is just me sort of 2 and 2 equals something, is there is a religious group in, like, the people who are doing all the hanging, right?
Yeah. So, oh, okay.
A lot of hanging, yeah, going around in this world.
Yeah.
You can't walk through a forest without swinging into someone's pair of dangling legs.
Uh-huh.
is that there's a religious group called the Seraphists, the Seraphins.
Okay.
And they, you know, sort of like I said, they're like religious extremists. So that kind of makes you think, in a world that's, you know, population is decimated, you know, perhaps like The Handmaid's Tale, maybe there's certain, you know, reproductive things, or there's the whole concept of, you know, sin and all that sort of stuff. I wonder if those two elements sort of combine, but I don't.
They're still going to be uptight about sexuality in
this
world?
They may still be uptight, maybe. I don't know. But
of
that's
all the
just,
things to worry about in the last
that,
of us
that, that's just sort right. of me being, you know, as I was thinking of this and writing the story, it was like, huh, I wonder if, and then it was like, you know, that, again, that's yeah. my...
Sure, yeah.
That it won't, like, her Ellie's sexuality won't just be a detail about her. It'll be, like, an intrinsic part of the plot, is
yeah,
what you're
will,
saying.
Will people in world, will that be a thing that is a, I don't know, how to frame it, but yeah. will that be something for the other characters to recognize well, or to react
it,
to?
I think, from what you said, it does seem like it'll be a through line that is explored throughout that game and not just like a toss aside. So like, oh, by the way,
yeah,
kind of thing.
I hope so. I hope
tell
so.
Tell me this is a reach. Watching that demo, something that struck me is like, all those enemies, a lot more bows. It seems like, mm-hmm. I don't know if the world's running out of bullets in The Last of Us 2.
No one knows how to make these. I don't.
They're so hard. Also, a lot of whistling in that gameplay demo. Do you think that's like a fun nod to like Ellie whistling in the first one, like her learning to whistle, or am I just reaching way too far for that?
Well, that's
JV
like,
says that's a reach. Okay.
They were saying that's one of the communication sort of methods of the extremist group and sort of, you know, so you hear a whistle, then I think they kind of alert to your presence. And he talked about, Druckmann talked about sort of levels of awareness.
Yeah.
So certainly, you know, you hear in the trailer the different enemies kind of calling out to each other. I think she went this way. And it seems kind of a level just above of kind of what we're used to, and certainly in the last game. And he said the whistling was also kind of a way to signal the enemies to signal each other. So it's not just like, okay, you've been sighted. Now everybody knows where you are, and they're all just flocking to your location. It's kind of like something that goes up the chain, you know? And so I guess, you know, if you hear whistling, it's probably a bad thing.
Yeah. God, seeing that demo, it's just a good reminder of this is Naughty Dog, best in the industry, top of their game, huge budget. Man, it looks good. And right. I also winced on behalf of Days Gone and that team, like seeing that gameplay.
Right.
It's just absurd how good it looks.
Well, and I think the first Last of Us, I think they obviously cared about it, but I think it was a bit more of an experiment. Like, they didn't know if it was going to land in the industry the way it did. And then obviously, like,
what was it
it's one of the most beloved games, I think.
It was at the end of a console cycle, like literally the very end of of the PS3. And, you know.
Well, and I guess all I'm saying is, like, now they know that The Last of Us has like a big following behind it, and like now they, not that they care more because of that, but I just think like there's some weight there now that wasn't there for the first one.
Also, interesting little detail, while Reeves was actually playing Tetris Effect, Neil Druckmann was watching him play Tetris, which is a fun concept in the game industry. And then I was talking to him a little bit about like the smile at the end of the trailer, which I think is just a great, cool, impactful moment. And he was talking about how unbelievably hard it was. Like, over and above all the tech they literally had to build just to make that kiss look good at the end of that trailer, he said that smile was just brutally difficult because everybody had an opinion of, that's not real enough, there's not enough gums, you can't see enough teeth, that look doesn't look true. Yeah. And it was like a constant internal battle just to nail that subtle but still aggressive enough smile at the end of that trailer.
I mean, it's the same thing I struggle with every time I try to smile.
That's
well, I going back to that kiss, like, it was just technically kind of impressive that
That they didn't clip through each other's heads.
I mean, kisses in other games look really bad. So, like, that looked like a real kiss. Like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's true. You know, Sonic couldn't pull it off.
As we've seen, you know, with Mass Effect, it's like you just get, you know, the whole Uncanny Valley phenomenon.
Right.
Like, yeah. What's a smile and what's a creepy, you know, visage? It's, you know.
Yeah, who the hell knows? Hey, Last of Us Part 2. More excited after this?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've been excited for the game, certainly, but it's kind of interesting because, you know, you see that trailer, you marvel at so many things. We're talking about facial expressions, we're talking about lighting in the woods, we're talking about individual ferns and stuff like that, we're talking about blood, of course. But you see how smooth it moves, you know, in the way she transitions from, you know, diving under the car to picking stuff up to throwing that bottle against
that
dude's face. And you know, you always kind of think in the back of your head of like, well, it's a trailer, we're at a show, they want to put their best foot forward, what's real, what's not real. But I mean, if you're not going to bet against Naughty Dog to make that a smooth, you know, cool experience that lives up to what we've seen.
Yeah,
those action sequences are really cool. Like the first Last of Us had a bunch of like cool stuff where you had guys attacking you and you're like weaving through and basically improvising the action, right? And this one like just looks like it's going to be even better. You know?
I'm also curious as to, you know, we haven't seen any monsters yet. Like there's,
it is interesting.
It's all been people so far.
Really,
so I wonder if it's just one of those things where they're just going to move in a direction of, there has been an apocalypse, but we're kind of on like the tail end. Like we've maybe have gotten over it. And now the whole point is like, all right, society has been given a reset. You know, how do we deal with that?
But although if you remember, the marketing for the first trailer, they hit the fungus and then they let that stuff die for a shocking amount of time where it was just human enemies up until the very end. Then they hit the fungal infected again. And I wonder in this case if they're going to do it. And I don't know if it's too gamey to say like, hey, the virus has evolved, you know, like they look completely different and they're just saving that impact for later on in the marketing campaign. Right.
But yeah, I mean, there's also like the implication that, you know, in the start of that trailer, society has gotten to a point where they can plan a huge party, like a huge dance.
That's true. And the infected weren't like, we can hear you. Yeah. We're coming
and
over
like,
there.
The tone of that party was like, we're having this despite this oppressive world where like everyone seemed to be having like a genuinely good time.
Yeah, you're totally right. Although I'm sure outside there are 300 snipers just lined up ready to protect them.
Gotta protect everybody. Yeah.
The house They're is actually dancing. Made out of people strung up on the outsides.
Weird deal. Last of Us Part 2. We should rotate through and get some more editors on the couch here. So do all of you want to leave? Just the people on this couch. Wait, no. Kato, you can stay. You're cool.
Yeah.
You two in the middle. Do you guys want to get the hell out of here?
All right.
All right, great. Thank you. And the challenge is to get out without knocking over a mic or making too much noise by touching
the mic. Do you
want
to go first or should I?
You guys have to keep talking. You have to make some fun.
What else did you see today, Kato?
What else did I see today?
Yeah.
I played a little Pro Evo Soccer 2019.
Seems okay.
I caught up with the guys from the session developers.
Oh, how is that? Because so many people, including Leo Vader, was so excited for Skate 4, in theory, to be announced, and then sees that trailer, and it's like, is this going to scratch that itch? Is this all I need?
Well, you know, like people ask me, obviously Tony Hawk is sort of on one end of the spectrum or the arcade spectrum. You've got Skate, which is kind of approaching Tony Hawk, but it's not, you know, it's a little bit more sort of, you know, skill-based. And Session is even past... Skate. So,
are you kidding me?
Yeah. You know, I haven't played it since last year in like an alpha state, but I mean like you're using both sticks for your feet. And it's not that you can't get used to it. It's just that you really have to go into it saying to yourself, you know what? I'm not just going to play a skate game like I've played or like I like this kind of thing. And I'm just going to do it. You kind of want to learn how to adjust those controls. You know what I'm saying? Like you have to have an open mind. You've got to be willing to take on the challenge. Because their whole thing is like, you know what? You know, it's not like we want to like kill you or make it so hard, you know, so that your thumbs bleed. But they're just like, we're committed to doing what we want to do. And it's not Skate. It's not Tony Hawk. It's its own thing. So
yeah, that's cool. Matt Burtz, for your own confusion, make the arm of the mic stand parallel with like the leg on the bottom. That's what you got to do. Nope. So go the other way with the top. You see what I mean? There we go. And then you can rotate a little bit there. Then it won't tip over and fall in.
I think we're good.
All right, sweet.
I think it's tipping.
So, audio listeners, we have Matt Burtz and we have JV Gwaltney here.
Hey,
welcome, guys. JV, I haven't seen you in a long time.
I know.
How's your E3 been?
Hectic.
Get up on that mic, man.
How closer?
Just get closer to it. You're all right. okay. So, before E3, you played a lot of Rage 2.
Yeah, we I went to Sweden and checked out Rage 2 at
Avalanche. Wait, you went to Avalanche?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Holy cow, how was it?
It was real fun. The food was really good. Really? But the game was super fun.
Okay.
Yeah, I really dug it. Bert's played some of it today, so I don't know if he agrees or disagrees. But I played the original Rage, and I thought it was a pretty good time. But I really like Rage 2 because it reminds me a lot of Bulletstorm, you know, in terms of wackiness and like how the gunplay feels and just overall tone.
Yeah.
You know, except for the weird sort of seriousness sometimes in Bulletstorm.
Oh, it's just like,
yeah. But I really liked it. We didn't get to see the open world. That's my big concern
The
game.
It was just like a little combat arena?
Yeah, it was just a little combat arena. I think Bert's played the same demo, but like it hits all those bullet points that you want from like an id Software game.
Yeah.
Like the combat is fun. There's its own kind of rhythm to it. It's super gory if you're into that. Like the dismemberment is great. Yeah, so I really dug it.
Yeah, I'm never going to be the guy that turns down id-designed weapons, you know, like they're just fun to shoot, you know, and the game has that kind of like heaviness to the shotguns and the accuracy that you want out of an assault rifle, you know, it feels good. And the powers that they give you, it feels different than Doom does, you know, like you're not as fast, you don't have the parkour stuff, you can do some slides and stuff like that, but, you know, like you have the ground punch thing that kind of knocks everybody back. And
yeah,
you also have like a telekinetic blast that you can like blast people out of like the second floor of like a broken skyscraper.
Okay,
which is real fun.
Are you worried about the open world? I mean, it's coming from an open world focused studio, so it feels like that's the least of my worries.
I'm worried. I mean, I think Avalanche makes interesting worlds and sort of with wacky tone, but their worlds are often pretty sparse and also like technically unsound. So that's my concern. Yeah, I saw none
of
that.
I wonder, like, can you preserve id's extreme performance when it moves into a wider open world than what we had in Rage, you know?
Right. Yeah, and like in the initial trailer, I remember there's this one shot where the player is throwing around what's basically the crawl thing.
100%,
the wing stick. Like, it's straight up the crawl stick.
Uh-huh.
And he's in the middle of the desert, and there's like just a bunch of armies, or just there's just like a bunch of bad dudes he's fighting in the middle of nowhere, and it just looks totally unappealing. And like the developers just loaded up like that part of the map and just did spawn 20 enemies just for a test.
Yeah,
and you know that's I'm concerned that's what the open world gameplay will be.
Interesting.
Like,
all right.
I hope I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong, but like when I envision like. Because so much of id Software's like combat is in tight contained spaces or like corridor areas, like even Doom, like its biggest areas were not that big. They were chambers, you know? So I'm really curious about if that combat loses its rhythm and tactical appeal when all you have is an open sprawl.
Did you get a better sense of how they're divvying up this workload between id and Avalanche? Is it just kind of id and name only and Avalanche is...
No, this is... What I took away from talking to them both was like it was pretty 50-50. Like
50-50,
this is
50,
yeah,
really?
This is like a collaboration. Like yeah, like it's just two studios actually working together on this whole thing. id Software just didn't go, oh yeah, here some tech.
Right.
You know, like they're actively working together is how they explained it to me.
Okay.
Like until this thing is done.
Yeah.
Like constantly every day.
That's wild. And so like the tone of the marketing is very. People have commented it's a little bit like Borderlands. I think it's a good marketing campaign to get people interested in Rage 2. Does that come across in the gameplay as well? Does Andrew WK constantly come out and play concerts or anything like that?
Well, I'm not sure what you're asking here. Are you asking me like if someone saw this marketing campaign and said, okay, this looks more like Borderlands and sat down to play this and they expected Borderlands type gameplay, would they be disappointed?
Yes.
Yeah. I think incredibly yes.
Yeah. It's not co-op. This isn't a game where you're going to get hundreds of different weapons that I'm aware of. You know, like
no, it's not easy novelty. Pink explosions everywhere.
Yeah, numbers aren't flying from people, and like the enemies don't feel like bullet sponges too. Like they actually feel like reactive enemies that sort of, you know, squeal in pain or when they get shot.
Yeah, they might take a clip to take them out, but that's because you're kind of taking armor off of them. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, they don't feel like weird sort of enemies from an MMO, which is why I've never really liked Borderlands that much, like the combat in it.
Right.
Like, it just feels like, oh, there's numbers flying off of this guy.
It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so feeling good about it overall?
Yeah, I feel like half of the game is solid.
Okay.
Like the whole shooting and close quarters combat is solid. You know, there's nothing really to be worried about there. But like the other half of the game is that open world, and I know that Avalanche has built, you know, a reputation of making, you know, fun open world games, but this seems more precarious, I think, and I need to see proof that like the game is fun in those open spaces.
Yeah,
is where I'm at.
Real quick, we talked about it last night, so I don't want to go on for a long time, but. In general, Wolfenstein, Youngblood, feeling very good.
I don't know why you're asking me about this.
Yeah, JV, if you're unfamiliar, JV has played each Wolfenstein game 30 times through. I don't even know at this point. It's stupid. It's a stupid amount. So, Wolfenstein 1, like, well, not Wolfenstein 1, but...
The New Order?
Thank you. How many times through that thing?
27.
It's stupid.
I bet you he's going to open up, like, a co-op guide service, you know, where if you want to play through it, I'll play with you and right. tell you everything.
I always need to be this sister, but I'll guide you through it.
I'll tell you all the trivia.
Okay, yep. Feeling red hot? Feeling lukewarm on Youngblood?
I am feeling red hot.
Oh.
Stopped. I'm excited. Like, my bare minimum is, like, I was not expecting to get a Wolfenstein... See another Wolfenstein title be announced this year. Like, when that came up, I assumed it was just for Switch. And then there's this bit where Serial told me later. He was like, yeah, as soon as Jin's came up and they announced that they had something else, you just sort of flipped out, and I don't remember that bit where we were. That was great. But, you know, it's interesting that... I don't think it's the third game. I don't think it's
That's the question. It's
yeah.
not.
That can't, I mean, it could be, I guess.
No, I don't think it is because it doesn't have a 3 in the title and doesn't, the last two games have used new in it. So I'm pretty sure that this is a spinoff set after the third
like
game.
Do you think it's old bloodish? You think
yeah,
it's a short
I think
thing?
It's old bloodish.
Yeah.
They said something like this is the next game. They had some framework to kind of diminish the idea of it's DLC or it's a little thing.
Well, right, but that's marketing.
Maybe.
Yeah, to me that's like I think there will be a Wolfenstein 3 that is the new whatever.
And then goes back in time again?
No,
it's set in the 80s.
Yeah, I think this is after like the trilogy cuz they presented when I talked to Jens and the rest of the team when we were doing coverage preceding Wolfenstein 2 coming out.
Yeah.
Like he kept harping on that was this is a planned trilogy.
But that presupposes failure, doesn't it, given like circumstances that they're in?
Maybe. I mean, we're also talking about a game that does funky things with time travel.
Yeah.
So, you know, alternate timelines. But I think I'm very curious to see what this game is. Like, if it is just, Wolfenstein but co-op, or if it's maybe in a different genre.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, it's more Wolfenstein, and I'm all about that. I think that universe, like, the rebooted universe, or it's not rebooted, but, you know, this Machine Games' take on Wolfenstein is fascinating and has one of the best stories in games. So, like, I want more of that.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right, Ubisoft, real quick here.
Yeah.
Division 2, has anybody played that?
I did.
Okay. Washington, D.C., we haven't really talked about it. Cool setting. Feels a little bit like post-apocalyptic Washington, D.C. Okay. I guess I'll do it again.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the setting in general?
I'm excited that we're going to get more diversity. You know, as much as I loved the snow-packed streets of desolate Manhattan, it got really one-notey. And they're definitely creating distinct biomes this time. They're you know, there's the flooded, you know, kind of central area. There's going to be like the mall with all the old historical landmarks. You're going to go out to the suburbs in Georgia. They're going to really try to offer different experiences. And what they say is that the play styles that you have are going to probably have to change in the different biomes too. Yeah. So I'm really appreciative that we're going to have more diversity with setting.
Yeah, that's true. So overall, feeling pretty good about Division 2?
Yeah, I mean, the gameplay is not doing anything like remarkably different.
Sure.
You know, they're making some small changes. The armor feels a little different. They're putting in some end game progression, which, you know, is smart as we've learned from Destiny 2. You should probably have that.
Oh, that's
But the gameplay doesn't seem radically different to me. And the enemies are a little bit less spongy.
Yeah.
But they still, you know, like, they're still heavies. You're going to just sink, you know, like, 4 or 5 clips into.
Right. But
they're trying to contextualize that with, like, armor. They're wearing, like, these giant pieces of armor this time.
See, I can get behind that. Like, my problem with the original Division was, like, here comes this plumber with a pistol running at me.
Yeah,
I just shot him 3 times in the face with a shotgun, and he did not go down.
The time to kill is way faster with people that aren't wearing armor.
Really?
It's not glass cannony. It's not like Rainbow Six where a perfect headshot's going to take a dude down.
Yeah.
But they do go down much quicker.
Okay.
See, I'm on board for that. I will give this a try just for that because I couldn't get past it in the first one. I was like, this is so dumb. I hate this.
I hate
this so much.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. There's a great New Gameplay Today video. It's over an hour long from Leo and Cork. They played a lot of it. What'd you guys, just you played it? Anybody else play Assassin's Creed Odyssey?
No, I haven't played it.
You played it as well, Kato? Yep. Okay, great. What'd you guys think? You feeling good about it?
I liked it. I preferred the female character. Kind of a weird observation. It seemed like in like the cutscenes when people are talking, like the face models and stuff seem like...
Yeah, they're a little stiff.
Oddly, like almost like jittery too. Like something was just... going on. And okay, this is an early game, you know, so like certainly understand these things get addressed. It's just for, you know, what is clearly tech that they've already used for, you know, the previous game and stuff. You just kind of would think things would hit.
Well, I mean, it's clearly a plot point, like in Assassin's Creed, like all the glitches, those are on purpose.
Yeah, well, okay,
sure. I don't know that really going that far. I really dig the setting. I dig the cool Witcher-esque kind of open world RPG they're doing.
Yeah.
But it's so funny to me. I feel like Ubisoft just can't get away from the whole assassin thing quick enough. Like now that even to assassinate a dude, you have to hold a bumper to even get to the point where you can do an assassination. You know, like they're even tucking that further away.
Aren't they just making cool open world RPGs at this point? We should applaud them for that.
Like, no, I love it, but okay. Use a different brand. Like why? Like there's an assassin theme.
I think they're trying
it with Skull and Bones. I mean, like
yeah, that's true.
You know, they've done this, you know, in the past where they come up with a concept and they like it. They put it in Assassin's Creed game and then they go, you know what? This is really cool. We were right. Maybe we can build a brand around it.
Right, right.
I do like the bumper and D-pad mapping different stuff to D-pad. There's like a health thing. There was like an area of attack. Mm-hmm. There was a really cool one where you steal a guy's shield and beat up against him. I think it just added an extra layer. I didn't love the combat in Origins, but you know, I could do it. But I think that adds just an extra layer for like some of those real tank enemies to like just give you a little bit more of an in.
I have a question because I've seen a lot of this take since they did the gameplay reveal for this, and coming off of the news that we broke, by the way, of Anthem not having romances.
Oh yeah.
There's been a lot of people I've noticed on, you know, sort of social media going, oh, it's interesting to see other developers like Ubisoft sort of do that. You know, with, you know, sort of still like the dialogue options and like the romance stuff. Like, did you guys get a sense of like sort of that classic BioWare stuff?
Yeah, I mean, playing? there's a, you can't miss it. There's a heart icon right next to
Oh, really? Just like full conversation choice.
Yeah, in the dialogue. Like, you're not going to miss it when it's a chance to, you know, make an overture towards somebody. Like, it's super blatant.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
Yeah. I guess I like that idea of BioWare being pushed out of a certain field, and all their other developers like, yeah, hey, there's gold in them hills. Let's go, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's cool. Yeah. At least that sort of like gets to live on in a way if like BioWare doesn't do anything else with that, you know?
Right.
And let's just be clear, there is still romance options in Anthem. It just actually has to be another human being.
Right.
Oh,
you
yeah.
have to have
so much.
You have to have actual real life.
Yeah, you have
game.
To have real game. Yeah.
Yeah. In one of the interviews we have coming up with Casey Hudson, he looks directly in the camera and he says, "Get game," which I thought was a bold move overall. So the second ACO in general, feeling good. Feeling okay?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a fun open world RPG. Yeah. I just like, as a person who really loves the assassin's fantasy, that's kind of being lost, and I wish it would still exist somewhere.
Totally.
It doesn't need to be in these games. They should rebrand them. I really am on board with that.
Yeah.
But
what'd you think about the end of that trailer where they showed the Minotaur? Is that just nonsense? Some crazy sequence where it's going to be some guy who pulls off his bullhead towards the end?
Well, and remember, they did the Anubis stuff.
I guess so.
Yeah, so just DLC. It feels like they're just teasing, like, oh, and this we'll have events like that.
Yeah. Here's the thing you expect. Don't worry, it'll come eventually. Cool.
But it does feel stupid a little bit. Yes,
it's a little
to
weird.
Answer your question.
A little weird. Yeah. Hey, that's day two for E3 2018 from the editors. But off camera, if you can't see it, and I don't think you can, there's a table filled with interesting developers. They're going to come on, talk about their games. Should be a good time. So if you're watching the live stream, the video version of it, okay, there's a couple different versions. Live stream. Stay tuned. Within 15 minutes, we'll be back with developers. It'll be a good time. YouTube archive. It should be a separate option in your feed. You can find it. Audio listeners. It'll be coming up in the same episode. But stay tuned, and should be a good time. So look forward to that. But bye, everybody. We'll be back in a little bit. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to E3 2018. I'm still here. I'm Ben Hansen, joined by a wonderful crew of game creators that barely know each other, which is really a best case scenario. We're going to really get to know each other here on mic. So I'm joined by Thomas Buha from Remedy.
Hello, where do I look?
You can look at that camera way over there in the distance there.
All right.
You guys announced Control.
Yes, we did.
Very exciting at the PlayStation press conference.
Yes, and I'm so glad that we were able to keep it a secret. That just blew my mind in the end, because like the last couple of weeks, I've just been really worried about that. And there was somebody on the Remedy forums that have been around for like almost, I don't know, 20 years. So there's really very few people there, and somebody had dug up the trademark Control, but
really?
And it's that message has been there on the message board for something like 3 weeks, and nobody picked up on that.
Were people talking about it? Were you refreshing that page, just seeing who else was going
to
jump in there?
I just really stayed away. I was like, okay, I didn't see anything. Like, I'm just not. I mean, we registered a bunch of stuff to, you know, throw people off, but that was awesome that the none of the details of the game came out.
It's the worst when it's an announcement. We had that last year and some screenshots leaked, and it's like, ugh.
God. And all right, let's get to the rest. We'll definitely get to Control here in a bit. Also joined by Dan Greenewalt talking about Forza Horizon 4.
That's right.
Very exciting.
All things Forza.
Yeah, all things Forza. I mean, because you've been around since Forza 1, is that right?
Yeah, I'm one of the founders of the team, the creative director on the franchise, so I've been in the same place. No career ambition at all. I just stay one place. But the franchise has grown up quite a bit around me and has kind of forced me to grow my skills a little bit more than I guess I ever intended. But yeah, Forza Horizon 4, we just announced that. A lot of great news around that. Huge buzz. The crowd went crazy. The briefing was so fun. I mean, the crowd... we've never had a crowd that big at the briefing, and just hearing the crowd erupt was awesome.
And there weren't boos, right? There were applause. The best kind of erupting. All right, way to go, man.
I got the single note on Halo, that ding, you know, on Master Chief's helmet, like, I thought the roof was going to cave.
Really?
It
sucks that stuff doesn't come through better in the stream. I wish it did.
You know, there's big lights there in the auditorium. Clap now, scream now.
Lose your mind when the Who cover starts playing. Everyone enjoy that trailer. All right, we're also joined by Thomas Mahler, CEO of Moon Studios and the game director for Ori and Will of the Wisps.
That's correct.
Get up on that mic more than you think.
Yeah.
Really make yourself comfortable. Congratulations. What has your show been like so far, man?
Just showing the game, enjoying it in this state. We've been up all night for the last 2 months. So,
2 months? It's fun. Do you even get to feel this, or is this just a nightmare that you're walking through LA for?
Well, it's hard work. Like, showing anything at E3 at any point, you know, is always tough. But yeah, it's fun.
Well, let's talk about that. Three experienced game designers here, game developers. Thomas, what is your exact title here? Just so we have a frame of reference.
Head of communication. So.
Okay.
Feeling slightly out of place.
But you know the game industry well. If you don't remember, last year you were on the podcast as well with some wonderful folks. A press background from Finland. So expert opinions, nothing but coming from that end of the couch there. But what is so hard about showing a game at E3? Is it the pressure, the fear things are going to leak? Is it getting the build stabilized? What is number one fear and anxiety inducer throughout E3?
Keep naming things.
It's just all that stuff?
Pretty well. Exactly. Keep going. Okay. Like, I don't know which one's number one.
It's, yeah.
The teams always work very hard. It's almost like creating a vertical slice for a concept. You've got to really create a piece of the game. And it has to be polished to a level. You know, you'll see on a demo, it'll say 20% done or pre-alpha code. Yeah, right. We polish all of our experiences to near finished levels. And that means doing full QA passes. You need to stabilize the build. You have to do a lot of things that are usually done at the end of the game right there. So you're really just shipping a slightly smaller product, but often it crosses all of your code base.
So at that point, I mean, do you have to go back and redo it before you ship the entire game? Or is it like, can we nail this one piece down and then build everything else up to that level and then we're good?
That's the idea. But like, there's no way around it. Like, when you make a demo, production takes a hit. Like, you really, and that's like the worst thing. Like, any throwaway work is really, really bad. So, I mean, especially in Control's case, like, it is a mission from the game that is very, very polished, but will it change? I'm sure it will change by the time we ship it.
It seems like the entire point of the game is everything changes.
Sorry?
It seems like the entire point of the game is everything's always changing and morphing. And
yes.
It's a trippy
world. Which gives us a great excuse. but back to your question, I mean, like, it like you said, it's just like a massive list of things. Like, there's so many things to think about. I mean, our demo was done about 3-4 weeks before we came out of E3, which is like a record for Remedy. Usually the build is being sort of compiled by the time we get to the airplane. But everything from like build security, like, I mean, we bring our own hardware, like we travel in different groups.
Different groups?
Of course. I mean, you don't want everybody, well, I mean, you don't want so much of the company in the same airplane. And like,
is that serious? You guys are like the government?
We do all things like that. I mean, not that we think that we're all that special, but like, it makes sense when you have two different demo machines, they shouldn't be on the same plane. All those sorts of things, and things just come up. Like this morning, we were setting up the demo, and we're wondering why there was clear input lag in the demo. Like this can't be. Like we've tested this. We're playing in the exact same machine here as we're playing back in the office, and then we like looked at some of the information that the TV gave us, and we're like, the vertical refresh rate is 30. But on the other one, it's 60.
Oh, no.
Like, how is that possible? Like, you can't change that on the TV. And then we, like, looked at the demo PC. I was like, huh. Okay, so it wasn't about the controllers being broken. It was actually a setting in the demo. So there's all these things that come up.
I think it's often the small things that you can't predict. You know, right. You have, like, oh, we 2 months ago, like, we thought, oh, yeah, we're doing this little demo, right? And there's so many things coming up where you can't even think about it. Like generally, I think with games, it's you can't really use a waterfall model, meaning, oh, you first do this, then you this, then you this, and then you have a game, right? It's this constant testing, and there's a lot of perfectionists at Moon Studios where every single little thing gets tweaked and so on. And, you know, we're down to, you know, getting to sleep at like 3 a.m. only to have to then be up at 3:30 because there's a new thing coming in, and it's crazy.
Well, especially you guys have the extra challenges. I don't know if it's changed since the first game, but you guys are scattered around the world as well, right?
Yeah, we have 50 people now from 34 different countries. Which is
why
are
you
crazy.
Doing this to yourself? It's impossible.
Because what we want to do at Moon is just hire the absolute best talent, right? And the whole idea is we don't want to be in one office and relocate people and so on. We just want to basically talk to people and say, hey, you know, you're talented. Work for us.
And including, you guys hired not too long ago, like the creator of that Not Another Metroid 2 remake,
yes.
Right?
So we actually, it's interesting. So we're trying to kind of like really build this dream team for the kind of games that we want to make. So we have somebody from Rayman, you know, we have Milton who made by himself another Metroid 2 remake. We have someone who made Intrusion. And so on, like there's really crazy people. We have animators from Pixar, from Blue Sky, and so on now in the team.
Really?
Yeah.
It's showing. The game looks so good. And I was so happy that it got such a big presence at the press conference as well.
That was
amazing.
Crazy. I didn't know.
Yeah?
Yeah, Halo came off, and Phil was talking until the, what?
Halo number one, Ori number two. In terms of Microsoft lineup. No offense to Forza, we're going to get to it. It just seems great. But that's wild. I mean, so it's not communicated ahead of time that this is going to be sequenced this way?
No, not at all. No, yeah. I mean, Microsoft is very secretive about this. We don't know. But it was a super crazy surprise.
That's wild. Any surprising reactions from the community out there?
So far, the response is just great. You know, like we really try to kind of like just make this perfect package. You know, like Blind Forest, the response kind of like shocked us a little bit because we knew we had something good. But then we got, you know, Game Informer gave us a 9.5 and so on. Like, it's pretty.
We did? I don't even remember. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, the response has been really good. But then, like, I always personally, like, look for more of the, you know, what is the feedback? Is there any criticism, right? And this time, like, I really wanted to go in and say, you know, let's try to make a game where, objectively, there isn't that much to criticize.
Let's how see hard can it
off.
Be?
Yeah.
And you feel like you guys are on track for zero criticism of this game?
No, I mean, who knows? But the goal is that, right? The goal is really like the design philosophy was, I only want to do Will of the Wisps if Microsoft allows us to turn, you know, Will of the Wisps should be the Blind Forest, what Super Mario Bros. 3 was to Super Mario Bros. 1.
That's a great
analogy. So we take the core that was really good, that was already there, right? But really try to perfect it, really try to give people something where, you know, a game where even 10 years from now it would still hold up, right? Like a perfect, like artistically super nice crafted package. And I hope by now people know that, hey, when Moon Studios releases something, we really worked super hard to give the fans something that hopefully is extremely polished and it's just super fun.
And the messaging from Microsoft is, here's a dump truck of money, go for it?
No, but it was like there's definitely like on Orient the Blind Forest, we were kind of like a little bit strapped for resources, right? So there are a couple of things that we weren't able to do that we really wanted to do. Yeah. And this time, you know, this time we basically approached them and told them, hey, we are doing it if we can really do all those things this time around. And like, I hope people in the trailer, like when they watched the trailer, saw how many different things we're doing. It's pretty crazy. Like I always want for every single environment to have a unique hook, something that is that makes the game feel completely different, right?
Right.
And yeah, I think we are really slowly getting there.
Yeah, Forza Horizon 4. That's exciting.
Big moment.
Huge moment. I mean, Forza Horizon 3. Please don't be mad at me. That was the first one that wrote me in. I think a lot of it was the setting.
That's great. Like,
yeah, an amazing setting. I want to dive in. Had a blast with that game. Just adored it. Forza Horizon 4, take us back to like the early planning stages. Please tell me it's this situation where do you guys just have the whiteboard? This is like game designer dream of different locations you can go to and then just have like a full day of arguing? Or how does that process go for choosing the location?
Honestly, there's a lot of work before even talking about location.
Okay.
Our team tends to look at sort of big ideas, both technical innovations and design innovations that we want to bring to bear. And that's before we discuss what's in the game. So there's a long-term
R&D.
I'll get to how we got there. Believe me. So the long-term R&D, we're looking at things that are maybe going to be 3-4 years out that are technically feasible. We had been looking at seasons for a long time.
Really? Okay.
And it's kind of for a lot of open-world game developers, this is something we all kind of want to do. The ability to give players the same area you're in, but it changes. It evolves, cool. Right? I mean, this is something that's been going back for a long time. So the tech R&D was starting to come to place, and we knew that for Forza Horizon 4, we were going to be able to do seasons. So that changed the list. It changed the argument about what location.
Of course,
because immediately we needed a location that was going to really sing with seasons. And Great Britain just came right to the top.
Because you guys live there, right?
Well, it wasn't because of the living there, though. That did make the game much easier to go research.
I think one better country with seasons, Finland.
Yeah, when are you finally going to give Helsinki?
It's known for its amazing, amazing summers. And,
good point.
I live in Seattle, believe me. So yeah, you know, we've had a lot of people joking around about, oh, England, it's always raining, and yeah, it does rain, and that's a great thing in this game because the seasons are actually shared for the whole world. So everybody in the entire community will see the sunrise, the sunset. They'll see rainbows. They will see the rain showers. They also will have the changing the seasons every week. So every single week, the seasons change, and we share them together.
Okay, that's a fascinating idea. So your best case scenario, like everybody in this shared world just parks on the ridge, watches the sunset, and just comments on how beautiful the world is. Like that's peak gaming in your mind?
So that's the sort of thing that we were seeing in Forza Horizon 3.
Oh, interesting.
People
okay.
were creating these stories within the game through community, by being together. They were doing things between streaming and then just playing the game together in free roam and what have you, that they would create their own new kind of story and world. And that's what this is all about. It's a shared open world where you can explore it together.
Yeah.
And that's why we say, you know, the seasons, they change everything, not just the look, but they change the gameplay. So even like an island where there's a collectible, it's inaccessible because, well, there's water.
Right.
You can't drive the car across the water, but as soon as you get to winter, it freezes over. You can drive across there and go get the collectible.
I have so many questions. Like, I understand seasons changing in a game like Last of Us even, something like that. But how does it work in that kind of like shared world? I mean, if I parked my car on that ice and just played it for 24 hours straight, just driving in a circle on the ice, when it rolls over to spring, will I just drown? Or like, what is that transition like?
Well, we do keep your car where it is. So actually, when the transition happens, you stay in the same car, you stay in the same place, we advance time.
So it's just like a little cutscene of like, now it's spring.
Yeah, quick cinematic.
Okay.
It's a very quick load. And that was the thing with the R&D, being able to use the same world asset, but have everything change. We didn't want to make any compromises. So we wanted there to be mud in the spring, the sheep actually get shorn, so the sheep are really full. And
hang on,
get shorn.
Give it up, folks. That's games, baby. That's beautiful.
It's all the details, right?
Yeah.
So we wanted you to be transported this new season once a week and look forward to it, because actually every winter and every spring, they're all different from each other. So the winter you experience this week is going to be different than the winter 4 weeks in the future, where there's going to be new events, new cars to unlock, new things to do. So this is what's going to create the story of the game. It's you. It's you and the community together making these experiences.
Yeah, it's very exciting, man. All right, so the location, back to that whiteboard.
Right.
Okay, I got to imagine even like the back half of Forza Horizon 3, people are in the kitchen. There have to be ideas flying about where people want to go. I imagine everybody chooses their hometown first of all, like people from around the world, I'm sure, working in that studio, they're like, no, you don't understand. We have to do Finland. You don't understand. We have to do China. There's got to be those debates. Is it fun, or do you try and like push that down in the studio? Like, we'll get to that decision eventually. Everyone will have a say. Everybody relax. Is it less exciting than I think?
Opinions and arguments are part of being on a team. I mean, that's part of the fun part of being on a team. Everyone's got opinions. We go lots of directions with it. Both Motorsport and Horizon have this debate going on. It's as old as time. You know, yeah. What track should be there and what have you. But Britain just seemed obvious. And yes, the developer, Playground Games, located in Leamington Spa in Britain. And so most of those guys are coming from other areas within Britain. But what it allowed them to do is create incredible authenticity. So they could go on location. We were doing a lot of advanced techniques for capturing this cottage and that dry stone wall and all these different pieces of the country. And then we bring together Britain, almost like Australia was the best of Australia.
Right. Kind
of packed together. It's the same thing here. It's the best of Britain. So you can go to Edinburgh Castle.
Yeah.
And actually a new feature, you can buy Edinburgh Castle.
Ooh.
Yeah. So there's property that you can buy. And this is that whole idea that you just live in this Horizon world. It's no longer an endless summer. The seasons change, you can buy property, you can do jobs, race with your friends, be part of a team.
Yeah, and you guys got a little more experimental with the DLC with Forza Horizon 3, where you're experimenting more with snow, which is probably helpful tech moving into the next game secretly.
Yes, it was.
There we go. Also, the Hot Wheels thing was so effing cool. Like, once you guys ripped off that Band-Aid and you embraced the Hot Wheels license with crazy loop-de-loops, it's like, what would the fourth game even be? Is it just going to be sci-fi at this point? But that was just a fun experiment that's not a harbinger of things are going to be completely wacky here on out.
Right. I thought that was a great experience. It's exactly what you want an expansion to be. It takes you to a new place, but it's still the same, feeling. It's the same emotion that when you're in this area. But yeah, the moment I saw the orange track, it's like, I'm there.
Yeah, that's a good time.
The orange track was great.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't change the core loop of Horizon 4 itself. It's still, playful, fun, time with your friends. There are more ways to advance your career now. So before you had to be a racer to actually level up and progress. Now you can be a photographer. You can be a streamer. You can, and this is this whole idea. You live this Horizon life. You can progress in multiple ways.
You can be a photographer in a car?
You get points. So we've got a huge photograph community in Forza Motorsport and Horizon, but now you actually get points based on how people are looking at your photographs and how many photographs you take, so you can actually advance your career that way. We don't want to limit it to just being racing, though we love the racing.
But
we want people to have a fuller experience across the game.
Thomas, when you hear that description of the game, does it feel like night and day compared to what Moon Studios is up to?
Yeah.
Can you wrap your mind around building this world that they're building?
I think it's just completely a whole different development process. Like, we are doing this little, very artistic thing. And I mean, they're building this crazy open world. So, yeah, I think I don't think it shares that much, really, in terms of the development, probably.
Do you think, like, if you were plucked out and plopped into Playground, you'd just be horrified and confused about what am I supposed to be doing?
So here's the thing, I don't even have a driver's license. I don't think I'd be in the right spot.
We do have people on the team that are actually not interested in cars at all.
Oh, really?
But I think you would actually feel right at home, because the truth is the teams get broken into smaller groups. Mm. The smaller groups have a ton of autonomy. And that's really the nature of even making big games today. It's not one person making all the decisions. It's small groups that are able to roll up decisions towards a larger vision. So there's tons of room for creativity, but it does have to be predictable.
Sure.
So there does need to be some amount of understanding of how long is this going to take to make and what are the resources required. So there is a lot of program management that goes into that. But when the program is well managed, creativity flourishes. Mm. You can go towards that larger vision.
And it's to the point where if there's a photographer on the team that says, I don't give a crap about cars, I just loved Pokemon Snap and I want to put that in Forza Horizon, you can say, let's crunch the numbers. Yes, you may do that.
And then new filters are born.
That's amazing.
But it's like all the things you're saying, like it sounds absolutely awesome. It just gets me thinking how much nowadays games are like, they are so expansive, so large. Not every game, but like, I just remember back in like late 80s, early 90s, it's like you can play a lot of different games. They're over pretty quickly, or some weren't. But now it's just like, it seems like, okay, now I gotta get to work. I gotta be doing all these different things. And they're all possibilities, but it's daunting at the same time. Like the amount of like different features that get into games these days, like it just... don't know.
Well, especially from like a studio as focused as Remedy is, which is like we want to do story-based third-person action in theory. I know you guys are a little experimental around the sides and maybe moving into the future, but just that idea of we need a shared world. We need all these different options. We need to change the world at all times so people keep playing forever. Is that just nope? Not for us.
I mean, we all like that. I mean, that's
well, you're a huge Destiny guy, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm a big Destiny guy, definitely. And but it's you were saying like you're not sure if it would fit in. I agree. I think absolutely would fit in because like people who make video games tend to like video games. Like there's a lot of passion there. And I mean, for us, it's like we look at Remedy, all different games. We're like, man, like I wish we could do that. I think that's the hard part, especially there's a lot of difficult parts in being a video game developer, but it's looking at all those games and kind of understanding why it takes years to get there. It takes years to build that foundation to be able to do all those cool things. So sometimes it's frustrating. Like it takes a while to build the tech. But then you're also super inspired, like about what you guys do and all that. So it's inspiring at the same time.
I just love how many different types of games there are right now. Yeah. I mean, I think we really are in a pretty amazing time. There are big teams, there are small teams, there are mobile teams, there are console teams, PC teams. There's teams just based out of China or South Korea that are making amazing games, incredibly creative. There's so much genre blending going on as well, where teams are borrowing from old ideas and new ideas and putting things together, new progression systems being born. We're just at a really cool time. You can be on a big team, be on a small team. You know, budgets are small, budgets are big. It's all of that. And yeah. I think the gamers really just benefit from this. You've got so much choice now of where you can go in game. And for me, as a game designer and developer, I just see it as community building. How can I get as many people into this and into this this game to build more community? Because community builds more community. You know, the more people are in there, the more people that come in. That's how we attract them. So it's less about sales or marketing or all of these things. And it's really now in our hands as creators to create great experiences that our fans then go stream. And the streaming creates more fans.
Of course,
so I feel like we have more power or destiny over the types of games we can promote ourselves.
Yeah. And speaking of community, that Remedy community, they're focused, man. They're passionate. They want Alan Wake 2 already.
Oh, yeah, they do, and we're not giving it to them. I mean, it's nice that people still, you know, love Alan Wake, and I think there's quite a bit of Alan Wake in Control.
Yeah.
Not in literary sense, like it's Control is a new universe and a new game, but you can kind of definitely see that the sort of darker aspects of the game and the sort of mysteries is kind of influenced by that.
It seemed like it was nice that it was a surprise for people watching the press conference at Sony, where they, I think I was in this room watching it with some people that didn't know it was coming up, and they said, "What is this?" And then across the room it was like, "This looks like Quantum Break. What the hell is going on here?" So what is this game?
That's interesting now that people have learned about Control, and we're getting a lot of like it's like Quantum Break, and I'm bit blind to that, but obviously, you know, it's the same tech, a lot of the same same people as well, and yeah, both games are third person and have action in them, but that's pretty much it. I mean, they're not they're two different games.
But this game was like in its infancy while Quantum Break was shipping, or like was it a complete overlap of? How does that transition work from people that worked on Quantum Break to moving over to Control?
Well, I mean, from a business perspective, I mean, you have to have another game in production by the time you ship the other one. Right. Otherwise, you have lots of people without work.
Yeah.
A small team was working on Control before QB shipped. But then once QB shipped, just start moving more people over. And of course we have the other game Crossfire as well. So we've been busy, but Control's been in the works for a while for sure.
Okay. So all I know, third person, trippy action game, the gun had cubes that rotated out in a strange way. What more can you say about what this game is?
I've never heard the service weapon described in that way. we call it the service weapon.
Okay.
And it's this transforming weapon. So Jesse, the main character, has supernatural abilities, and that kind of extends to the gun as well. It takes different forms. sort of throughout the game. So, yeah. I mean, we're just trying to put a lot of weird shit into the game.
Okay, this is the weirdest Remedy game so far?
We hope. I mean, we hope so. I mean, we embrace the weird. I mean, we have the whole term new weird for the game. But it's been interesting to see. We have a lot of new people on board. So a lot of sort of older generation Remedy folks that really want to make a different kind of game. And then the new people who come in, they're kind of like there to like make what we used to make, which really, it's interesting. We're like, no, you don't have to kind of do things that way. Just feel free and let's do something different while keeping it, you know, making sure that it still feels like a Remedy game.
Yeah.
But Control definitely is different. I mean, I don't think most people expect us to use the term Metroidvania when we're describing a Remedy game.
Hey, and there we go, Ori. Hey,
they'll definitely have a little bit of that. Really? I think, like, yeah, I mean, the game takes place in the oldest house, which is this massive transforming building that you kind of see in the trailer, and the sort of fantasy is that you get out of the elevator on some floor and you don't really know what to expect.
The oldest house?
Yes, that's what we call it. So it's based on a building that's in New York. Tom Hanks tweeted about that like a year ago. We're like, man, I wish that would have happened like at a different time. So it's the old AT&T building. Okay. It's this brutalist concrete building in New York, and that kind of inspired us partly. It's this building that has no windows or anything in our game.
The whole game takes place in one location?
Yes. Yeah, so, but it's this transforming location. It's like it's almost infinite. So it's sort of the core of the building is kind of this very mundane. So there's this juxtaposition between sort of mundane and then just weirdness. So the core of the building kind of, you walk around, it kind of seems like this old 80s kind of brutalist office, but the deeper you get into the building, the weirder it will get.
Okay, so it's kind of like Die Hard meets Cube meets Inception. Is that where we're going here?
That sounds like the best game ever, so it must be the one we're making.
Is that right? All right, something like that.
That's going to be pretty hard to match, but yeah, I mean, there's definitely influences. I mean, there was a point in the project where we were thinking, like, how do we describe it, and like Die Hard kind of did come up.
Sci-fi Die Hard.
Well, this is not sci-fi. I mean, like Quantum Break had science fiction, but this is very different. It's a lot darker, and you know, crazy supernatural abilities, and we don't want to use the word like magic because that's kind of very very Harry Potter like. This is a lot more sort of volatile and dark.
Okay. Crazy news this week at the Xbox press conference. Phil Spencer got on stage and said, "Hey, we purchased 5 studios, including Playground, the creators of Forza Horizon."
Yeah.
I think, tell me where I'm naive, but from the outside perspective, I was like, oh, I just assumed they already own them. What was that announcement like for you guys working on Forza Horizon 4?
Well, I mean, we knew about the announcement.
I would hope so yeah. So
that moment wasn't a surprise.
Sure.
But, I think this is something that we've been, as both teams, Turn 10 and Playground, working towards for a long time. So I think it's been a process or a relationship that's been evolving over the years. And this is just the next sort of natural or logical step in that relationship. Because they're a very creative team. We work very tightly together. Now, teams, you know, culture of teams makes games. And the Playground culture makes a great game in Horizon. And yeah, the goal is to keep that exactly the same. But we knew how to communicate well together. Turn 10, Playground, Microsoft, we all communicated very well. This allows us to have two-way communication so that Playground is brought into Microsoft's strategy at a much earlier level. Right, because they were an outside company, they couldn't be brought into a lot of the deeper strategy that's happening, and now they can be part of that. So I think it's again just a natural evolution of a great relationship going on 8 years.
Help me out. What is the history of Playground? What did they start out doing? And was Turn 10 is owned by Microsoft already, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so, Turn 10 was actually born of Microsoft. So okay. I was a Microsoft employee when me and 3 other guys pitched the original Forza.
That's
the
wild.
Team grew from there. So I've been a Microsoft employee for, I don't know, ever?
Yep, that's
feels
right.
That way.
When
so
you're a fetus, yeah.
With Playground, though, 8 years ago at E3, we met with a couple of guys. They had just broken out of Codemasters and formed a new company. They didn't have a team, and we really liked them. I honestly, I think we invested in the individuals.
Didn't they also, just sort of interrupt, because I remember it was kind of like a racing dream team. I think there's a lot of people that, because Sega used to have a racing studio that only made that one Sega Rally game.
Yeah, the AM Studios.
Yeah. Right? No, this was in the UK.
Oh, that made that? Yeah, there
yeah,
was
which,
one.
Which was amazing, and mm-hmm. then Sega just shut them down. I think some of those folks definitely ended up at Playground, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, the UK development community has had tremendous history with racing.
Yeah,
I worked with Bizarre Creations back on the original
Blur.
Project Gotham Racing. Well, before even Blur.
Blur's also great,
But, that Psygnosis, Codemasters, there's just been a ton of great development out of the UK. And so, yes, there was tremendous talent for Playground to pull from. And as they built from, you know, Horizon 1 and 2 and 3, they've been able to absorb, you know, great talent from around not only the UK, but actually all over Europe.
Yeah.
So that team is incredibly strong. And now, you know, it's not going to be one team. The goal is that they keep their creative juices, they keep their culture, but they have better access and better resources to build even greater visions.
And Phil Spencer said they split out and then their team's working on something open world, is how he phrased it.
That is what he said.
Boy, certainly sounds like a fable I'd like to hear someday. Very exciting. Here we go. What do you guys think about those Microsoft purchases of those studios? Surely they came a knocking to Moon, right?
I think it's a good thing for Microsoft. As a studio, we ourselves, like, we don't want to get bought. We don't want to get acquired. I think there's a certain pride that we have that we just say, nah, we want to, you know, not be employees of anybody. We want to work in our own pockets.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can't really talk about
it. Yeah, I totally get it. What's the benefit of being independent from Remedy's point of view, do you think?
Well, obviously we had a long history with Microsoft, and Remedy's always been an independent company, even though we're publicly listed these days. But when I looked at that and when Ninja Theory came up, because I was at South by Southwest with Tamim. We had a very good time out there because he was just relaxing after Hellblade, and it's just been awesome to see all the success they've been getting. So I'm pretty sure they were in a pretty good negotiation position. And then it's like when sort of things connect in the right way, like you say, it's like access to like more resources and all that. So I think I hope it's going to turn out really well for them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exciting to see that list and just realize that, all right, we're starting to build out the next generation of games in general. That was a big surprise, I think, for E3 this general. It just seems like it's coming so quick from the outsider's point of view, at least. Internally, to studios, does it feel like next gen is coming up quick as well?
what can we say?
It's a trap.
yeah.
I think what you're seeing, at least from the Microsoft side, is planning that's been coming into play for a while.
Totally.
Phil Spencer stepped into this role 4 years ago, I think.
Maybe less than that,
So, 3 or 4 years ago, and started really shaking things up. You know, the Xbox One X, super powerful console coming out sort of like mid-cycle, that was really news.
Weird,
right? That was something really new. And, man, the games are really good. It really had the sort of impact you'd hope as a fan, as someone who likes to play games. So I see all of this as part of, you know, what Phil has gone publicly and talked about, making gaming for everybody, broadening the number of players who are coming in, respecting all devices, trying to get people to play on PC and play on console and play wherever you want. I mean, I think he's being like kind of amazingly transparent, and that's really cool. And then Matt Booty, who just moved into the position underneath of Phil, he has a vision as well for studios, and it was under him that a lot of these acquisitions and discussions were happening. So I don't think there's a lot going on besides what you're seeing. I mean, just it's a great thing for gamers that studios is investing more in first party.
Yeah.
And on top of that, that Phil is looking to, you know, get more and more gamers into the world.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's too early?
I feel a little bit that way. Where I feel like some of my friends, you know, more casual gamers, but gamers nonetheless, it's like, hey, I got a console a couple years ago, starting to enjoy it. We just played a game this year, not too long ago, God of War, you know, where it's like, well, that's pretty tough to beat. You know, like, in terms of just quality, like, I'm cool with this graphical quality. I'm sure the budget was astronomical, but, like, we could ride this out for another 5 years. But I'm not in charge of pushing the future and pushing the boundaries, you know? So of course they need to start playing ahead. And if it doesn't hit for another 2 to 3 years, I'm sure we'll be ready by then. It's just, I think a big theme this year at E3 is just kind of the shock of, oh, Bethesda's just saying Elder Scrolls 6 is coming and Starfield's coming on next gen. It's like, oh, okay, let's just, you know, rip open the kimono. Here we go. Here's everything we got. The future is coming, folks. I don't know if you're ready for it. It's shocking from the outsider perspective, I think.
It's always been like that a little bit, though. Like, I remember the Xbox One wasn't even that long as a console generation, right? Like, it had like three...
The original Xbox,
Yeah. It had like 3 to 4 years or so.
Yeah.
And I think once we actually get there and you see the first games and what they can look like, right? That's when you're like, okay, I want that.
Right, right. Do you feel constrained by the tech with Ori? I mean, it looks so beautiful, but do you feel like you're pushing the limits?
Again, I think we're kind of like on the outskirts there. Yeah, we always try to push the tech. Like, we get a little bit of, you know, underestimated because we're making 2D games, as at least, like, you know, the Ori series are 2D games. And yeah, a lot of people associate that with, oh, you know, that doesn't need any hardware at all, right? But we're really, really pushing hard. You know, there's a lot of technology in Ori that is incredible. And we are really pushing Unity to an insane degree.
Yeah.
But the games that we want to make, like, I personally, as a designer, I don't really care about the hardware. I want to make games that, you know, even a decade from now still look great, right? So I need to make them timeless. And yeah, we do that in a way where I don't want to be constrained by tech, and I just rely on my tech team that the things I do run at 60 frames and it's all good.
Timeless equals 60 frames. Anything else?
Yeah.
This is not going to cut it. Yeah. Another interesting trend I've noticed at E3, and I think you can speak to it well, Dan, is there's been an interesting trend. Again, I don't know why I'm focusing so much on Bethesda, but it really stood out to me with Bethesda as well, like the announcement of shared world co-op, and you guys definitely hit that beat as well. And like, there's an eruption of applause when you talk about shared world.
Yeah.
And I think from, again, the outside perspective, it's like, I thought people didn't like online games. I think there's like that hardcore of the hardcore crowd that's like, let me play it single player, nothing at all. Yeah. But at E3, and I don't know how much we can put in this, but there is that passion, and there was definitely an outroar of applause every time there's an announcement of online co-op shared world.
You know, I think gaming is just broadening out.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about this driving over. There's more genres, and as I mentioned earlier, there's more genre blending. But also just the traditional game, it still exists. You know, a traditional single-player oriented game, they're great. They still exist.
Look forward to Control, everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't think it's anything about... I don't think this is about the industry changing. I think it's about the industry broadening. So... even the way that people find out about games. I mean, how did you hear about Fortnite? How did you hear about PUBG?
Right.
Did you hear about it from an article?
Yeah.
Did you read a review? No, it's streaming.
Yeah.
It's Twitch. It's Mixer. It's YouTube. That's how you find out about these games. Well, those games are always better as a community. That's where the stories come from. The story is not in a linear progression. In Fortnite, the story is of the evening. It was that round. It was that battle.
That's all you need.
You might have an amazing story. You know, same thing with Sea of Thieves.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy stories come out of Sea of Thieves. None of them are scripted. Now, that's not to say, hey, the industry is going from one place to another. I think it's just broadening out. People are gaming in more places and on more devices. We're seeing more games that are going cross community, PC to console. Console to console. I mean, this was unheard of, 4 years ago?
It's awesome.
5 years ago?
Totally.
We're just seeing an evolution of all of this. And I don't know. For me, I don't feel territorial about it. I feel excited about it. So, yeah, it's an open world in Horizon, and we're expecting people to create great community. But you can actually opt out. So if you want to play against Drivatars in a single-player world, that's fine.
Cool.
And then even if you are playing online, no one can hit you until you actually get into an agreement with them to play them cooperatively.
Really? Interesting.
So this is what I mean about blending. You know, we've learned the reasons why you didn't want to be in an online world. We can deal with that. Good design can take care of that problem.
Yeah.
And then giving players choice. You want to play with a normal controller or an adaptive controller? Do you want to play with on a PC or on a console? Do you want a 60 frame per second option on the Xbox One X? We'll give you those options. So that to me is what gaming's all about now. Bring people into the tent.
Absolutely. All right, Thomas, I need to ask, and I hope you've seen this trailer. I beg of you, I hope there's a Slack channel somewhere within Remedy where they're sharing this trailer. Did you watch the trailer for the quiet man during the Square Enix press conference?
I did not.
Oh, that kills me.
I told you, I haven't seen anything.
So is like, that right? Is it
like
tough?
John Wayne Quiet Man? I didn't see
it. No, I wish it was John Wayne Quiet Man. I don't know what this was, but it looks like Square Enix is doing a Quantum Break where they have live action video, and it was like this deaf guy walking in a back alley, then he's going to beat up some thugs, and then it cuts to quick gameplay, and then back to live action. God, I was hoping you guys were talking about it within Remedy.
Sorry, I feel really embarrassed, but literally like, all I've been doing is like demoing our game.
Yeah?
Like, I'm just...
Is it tough to be on the developer side, just so focused on your game at E3 and not seeing just the breadth of games out there?
It really is, and I kind of pride myself on really knowing sort of what happens in the industry, but I get up in the morning, I make sure that the demo team is, that they're okay, build is fine, and then it's just like... doing the demo and constant barrage of like emails about what we have to do next and this and that, and maybe there's a typo on the website on the German version of what, and this is all these things that you have to focus on.
Yeah.
And I mean, ever since the Control trailer ran at the Sony briefing, after I didn't see anything else in the briefing, just my phone just blew up like congrats and this stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
Checking the website, going everything. So
I think that's a pretty normal experience around here at E3.
Yeah.
I ended up getting texts from friends saying, check out this video or go see this game. And I didn't even know it was at the show because we're kind of going from one thing to the next. So I need outside help. Where should I go next?
Right. Yeah, totally. I've got half an hour. What can I see that's cool? And exactly. I can't get in to see the Resident Evil 2 remake because the line's too long. What am I supposed to do here?
So is it a Resident Evil 2 remake? So it's not like, okay.
And it's in the style of Resident Evil 4. But the cool thing I've heard so far, we're going to talk about it more on the show coming up tomorrow, is it seems scary. That's what people are saying, which is really cool. Like, to kind of take the horror elements that they kind of rekindled Resident Evil 7, bring it back, even with the RE4 perspective, through RE2.
It's so playable at the show floor?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds cool.
I think you're going to have to wait in a long line or have an appointment, but you can make it happen. You a big Resident Evil guy?
I used to love the older games.
Yeah.
And I liked Resident Evil 4, but recently... I just didn't have time anymore.
The
latest one is amazing.
What's it's that?
The latest Resident Evil
Seven,
is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Super good.
Oh, yeah. But I can't play that in VR. Like,
no, you don't have to play it in VR. Yeah.
Too terrifying in VR. I'm with you, though, man. Yeah. Okay, Control 2019, right?
Yeah.
That's the vague window we have. Not PS4 exclusive?
Hey, that's not vague coming from Remedy. who used to be saying, you know, when it's done. Man, I hated that when I was in the press, and that was the line they gave me. Yeah, things change when you're a public listed company. Like, you actually have to say these dates. So, yeah, 2019.
Awesome. Great. Dan, Forza Horizon 4. I'm looking forward to it so much. When's it coming out?
October 2nd. You can get it on Game Pass as well, same day.
That's wild. PC, same day, the whole thing.
PC, same day, yeah.
It's amazing. Ori, what do we got, man?
2019.
2019. Which game's coming out first, though? Control or Ori? You need to lock it down right now.
We're going to go head to head.
Same day, guaranteed. Let's locked in.
Sweet. Seems like every game is same day. Like, February looks insane.
February 22nd is pretty crazy.
Yeah,
also, everything before Red Dead 2 also seems packed as possible. It's wild.
This E3, at least what I mean, at least I got to see some of the press conference. It's just a lot of great games.
Yeah.
A lot of awesome games. Like, no matter what kind of game you like, you're covered.
I think that's true for the past couple of years generally. Yeah. Like the past 2-3 years, like last year you had Zelda and Mario at the same in the same year. Wow,
it's absurd. It's just absurd. Hell of a time for games.
So have I missed a new like F-Zero? Has Nintendo finally done that?
Let's see. There's a new Star Fox, but it's only if you play Starlink from Ubisoft. Look, it's complicated, Thomas. We'll talk about it off air. We have to get rolling, but. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for watching and listening to this episode of the Game Informer Show. We'll be back tomorrow night with a new episode, new editor impressions. We're going to be talking about Capcom. Should be a good time. A new developer roundtable. Everything you'd want. So, bye, everybody.